Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome back to season 6 of the Happy Vagina podcast, dedicated to celebrating pioneers in the female space who focus on making a difference in women's health, equality, and relationships. Each week, we chat to an inspiring human being as they explore the experiences that completely change their outlook, promising not only to educate, but also to entertain and enlighten. And today, I am absolutely beyond ecstatic to be joined by Adina Porter, Emmy-nominated, award-winning actress, mum, care ambassador, and activist campaigning for voting, voting rights, and clean water access. Adina, am I saying your name right, Adina?
It's a little complicated. Yes, you are. But my mother called me Adina. My dad called me Adina. I'm named after his mother. So the family pronunciation is Adina. But my mother didn't really like her mother-in-law. So she said, no, your name is Adina. So it was always this back and forth. But I introduced myself as Adina. And then I gave my daughter the middle name of Adina to continue the family tradition.
So. Oh, I love that. I love that. Well, Adina, welcome to the Happy Vagina podcast.
Thank you. Thank you very, very much for having me. I'm thrilled to be here.
Before we do a deep dive into all, I first discovered your work when you were in True Blood, and I'm a bit of a vampire fanatic, and I really loved your work. And before we do kind of like come back to some of the aspects of your life that I've been quite keen to do a bit of a deep dive into with you, we are going to start with the traditional Happy Vagina quiz, which is an either or, starting us off this week with a very binary quiz that I hope will give us some insight and break down some of the potential taboos that people may be struggling with in their life today. So are you ready for the totally binary Happy Vagina quiz? Okay, great. Adina, brief or G-string?
Brief. I mean, G-string for an outfit, but comfort every day, brief.
Has it always been that way for you as a woman?
Yes, because I tried G-strings, having that up my bum ass is just uncomfortable. And I have a large derriere. So I've actually found briefs that really cover comfortably all of my derriere. So Tommy John's, I think, is really, really, really good.
Tommy John's, are they like a boy short?
No, they're not like a boy short. Like, I will wear a boy short for like a cute, you know, walking around the house outfit, not with my children, but like with a guy. But for everyday comfort, just a good old fashioned brief below the belly button.
Tommy John's. I'm totally going to be looking up Tommy John's when I'm in America early next year.
A girlfriend of mine gave them to me as a Christmas present, and they are the most comfortable underwear I've ever had in my life.
I also celebrate having a rather large butt. As you say, bum, you said it was such like an English accent. It was so cute. I was like, that's so cute. Well, this is so sweet.
Both of my parents were raised in British colonies. So I have family in England. My father was born and raised in Sierra Leone, West Africa. We celebrate Boxing Day. So I have a lot of English traditions.
Wow. So do your parents speak with an English lilt, an English accent lilt?
Well, let's say my uncle, he did. My first cousins, they did. I mean, because one cousin went to Cambridge, the other went to, was it Oxford? Or someplace in England. She's a barrister, my first cousin. So yes, they did speak with, and my Aunt Maidri, she was the head of education in Bermuda, very British lilt, like soul food and things like that. We incorporated into our family as an adult, but growing up, it was all English, English tea, English Christmas cake, English pudding. Yeah.
I've got to ask you, I actually can't not ask, but you know, I just saw this on the news this week. There was some reporting about a French energy company that has bought a piece of land in an African country in order to create more sustainable energy. Okay. So this is like a good thing, right? Okay. And the women who have been farming that land are on the news crying because only the really wealthy, much land owning people, because it's a huge piece of land, it's not like just an acre, were given any money, and not very much. And the slightly more kind of local women, you know, the women who they have a little bit of land in order to grow crops and feed their children, were given nothing, and they can now not feed their children. And I was literally screaming at the television, how, when the conversation around the taking away of land from Indigenous people and colonization is so present in our consciousness right now. I mean, there's a big movement around it. I was literally like, how the fuck can they think it's okay to fucking do that? You know, like, it's like beyond my comprehension. So as a woman who comes from a family of, I know that your family were immigrants. You came to America, but I didn't know so much that your parents had grown up in countries that have been colonized. What's your feeling about the movement that's going on?
I think those women need, share that article so that I can then amplify it. That corporation is getting away with it because people don't know about it, and stealing land and not getting compensation for it still. So then what we can then do is amplify those voices by letting the world know that yet again, these women are being robbed. The country who negotiated the deal with that French company needs to be held accountable so that all of their citizens are being compensated for it. The African countries were just had a state dinner here, Biden, talking about wanting to work together and aid. Excuse my language, fuck aid. There's tons of natural resources there that needs to be compensated properly. And so France, if you want to go there for sustainable, great, then partner with the people, and not just the people in charge, but all of the people.
I mean, literally, I just taken us on such a tangent. And the next question is so outrageous based on the fact that we've just been talking about something so serious. But I am going to bring us back to the quiz because we've got plenty of time later to talk more about politics. And both of us are really passionate about the change and the movement and equality that's going on. So back to the quiz. Next question is tampon or period pants?
I used, when I menstruated, I no longer menstruate, I used and loved a menstrual cup, a diva cup.
When you were in your menopause or in your perimenopause, HRT or au naturel?
Au naturel, only because, I mean, if someone needs to use hormones and things like that, I wasn't against it. I just... it didn't get to that point where I needed it. And I also was really listening to my body to try to figure out what this, because I figured there had to be some kind of great wisdom that about this time of life that was no longer shared. Just like I had no idea that medicine was a female profession until like part of the Salem witch trials, those women were also, besides being landowners, they were also medical and medicine women. I had no idea about that. And that it was one of the things that changed from a female profession to a male profession. So anyway, all that to say was that I noticed that when I would go away to work, I didn't have hot flashes. So when I wasn't having the stress of being a mom, no hot flashes. So I was like, oh, okay, for me, let me figure out a way to be aware of my stress. And that's how I was able to ride my menopause journey.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And
that's so cool.
And so now I do yoga and meditate like 3 to 4 times a week. And I also kind of want to share that I was kind of expecting all these things to happen. Like I was no longer going to have a great sex life, that my the things would just start deteriorating. And it's been my experience just the opposite. I'm having the best sex of my life by myself as well as with partners. The worry of not getting pregnant, releasing that, and then, you know, enjoying this time, this pleasure is, no one told me that was going to happen with men. Just the opposite.
I know there's a lot of scaremongering that goes on around the loss of libido and the drying up of the vulva and all that kind of stuff. And actually it's like, I do believe in the power of the mind, and I don't mean to diminish people's experiences. And I'm only just starting into that period of my life. So I don't know yet what my experience will be. But what I hear you saying is that you went away and you realized that your hot flashes were not as bad when you were away. So you made a mental decision to be in charge rather than a victim of it. And I do think that the body listens to the mind, and that if we choose to be fearful of the vulva drying up and no longer being able to be used, or the atrophy, the thinning of the skin, which can be very painful for some women in sex. And again, I don't diminish the women that are going through that and that they've tried and they can't, but I think it's worth trying, isn't it, to decide to not buy into the scaremongering.
Yes. And I think, I mean, I'm a widow. My husband died, last husband died. I think my experience might be different if I was in a relationship, like a long marriage, because of the keeping things alive is so difficult, you know, when you are in a long-term relationship and having to deal with the pressures of life and children, all this kind of things. And because I don't have that. I have the experience of, like, I'm in a long distance relationship now, so it's the excitement of seeing a person, all that kind of stuff. It allows me to be present, to go on dates with myself, all these things that I have to consciously do because I can't just rely on having a partner. And therefore, I don't have to suffer the monotony, excuse my French, of having a partner. And so I get to be active. I get to be incredibly active with my sexuality. And maybe also because I grew up in a home where my mom, you know, a different generation, she didn't have that. She didn't have access to that. You know, I'll tell you the story about when I took my mom to a sex shop on Mother's Day to have her buy a vibrator, because I got tired of her complaining all the time and assuming that it was someone else's responsibility to perform something, and then all of a sudden the magic would happen. So I was in my 30s, and I took her to this wonderful shop in New York called the Secret Garden. I don't know if it no longer exists. It was on Mother's Day. And, you know, she picked out a little vibrator. She said she used it too.
I did read about your late husband, and I am sorry. And I'm also thrilled for you that you have found a new way of being more pleasure than you might have. And I hear you, you know, that I think as much as I'm sure knowing grief very well myself, that the two things can sit together, that you've got the joy of being able to explore the new and also the grief of the loss of not being able to grow old with someone who you anticipated. And the two things can go hand in hand. But I'm thrilled for you that you're exploring, which does bring me to my next question, which feels like, again, totally inappropriate, but it's the happy vagina. So fuck it. Which is clitoral or G-spot. Yeah.
Both. I'll share this story and I share it to let other people know that I didn't know how to have an orgasm for the longest time. And I was sexually active, but clueless. And you can stop me if it's just TMI, but,
No, it's not.
Okay.
It's never going to be TMI.
The guy I was with one day was just like, there's a disconnect here. You could just tell I was faking it. And I did some research and I went to the Mount Sinai Human Sexuality Clinic. Yes, in New York City, and I went to therapy. We went to therapy as a couple and she gave us exercises to do. And they weren't exercises like, you know, with my body or his body. I don't even remember what they were, but they were exercises and to learn, you know, how to have the skill. Because I just didn't know how. And I had my very first orgasm in Jamaica on holiday. And the vibrator that I had was this thing that you put on your, barbers would put on their hands to do like a scalp massage. And that was my very first orgasm. And I slept for like 24 hours after that. And then I also will share that I was sexually assaulted my junior year of college, which unfortunately 1 out of 5 mm-hmm. women will be sexually assaulted in their lifetime. So it's out there. And I knew that if I didn't want that person to win, I did not want my then sexuality to only be determined by what this person, you know, did unto me.
Adina, I'm really sorry that happened to you. Can I ask how old you were when you first had an orgasm-ish? Like, are we talking 28, 38, 48-ish?
26-ish, right. I think.
I'm really pleased that you said 28 because inside of me I was going, I really hope this wasn't like a recent thing. Like, I hope that she's had like years of pleasure.
No, I've had decades. I've had decades of it.
Okay,
I mean,
good.
I've only... G-spot is easier for me with a partner than by myself. Though there's one vibrator that I have that I can find it, but it's easier with a partner that. But I have, well, anyway, that was that. I can go on forever. I was a part of an acting troupe traveling around West Africa, going to different villages, talking about alternatives to female genital mutilation, because I'm not going to judge it because I come from a country that, you know, women do breast implants and other kind of implants. So I'm not there to judge. And it's women who are doing it for money. It's a job.
What is the alternative to FGM?
The alternative would be another form of income. Look for another form of income.
Helping them move, basically giving them the skills to move away and support themselves through something else. That's amazing.
And then just the knowledge that you can do other things, that this isn't necessary.
Yeah, we all get stuck, don't we? We can all sort of be thinking, our brains can just think this is what is it for life. Sometimes you need someone who can help you see outside of your own narrow-mindedness or the cultural narrow-mindedness so you can get a sense of something else. I'm definitely going to introduce you to a couple of my female FGM campaigner warriors in the UK, Nimco Ali and Hebo Wadir, who've both been on the podcast, and they're two of my favorite episodes. My last question for you in this binary quiz, I'm going to tell you what it is, and I'm going to answer it for you. It's vegetable or vibrator, and I've got a weird feeling you're going to say all of the above.
I'm never going to waste food, so I'm not I'm going to say vibrator, but I have mastered my fingers. I've mastered my fingers. Before, for the longest time, I could only come with a vibrator. But now I also can come with my fingers. And I find that orgasms with my fingers are more intense, are deeper, are longer. I think it's just because the nerve endings in the fingers. So there's, there's always a guarantee when I have my vibrators, and I have different ones. But I'm so grateful to have mastered with my fingers. And I discover my fingers with my imagination, not using, erotica or pornography. I find those most satisfying because then it's like breath.
I concur.
And it's quieter. And now that I have teenagers who might know what's happening, I just really like, quiet.
I'm just having a secret personal moment of thank God I don't have kids. So I don't need to worry about that. But we're going to come back to the conversation around children a bit later. You've just kind of shared, thank you for sharing so openly and beautifully about, some of the deeper choices that you make as a woman, and you've told me that your discovery of the orgasm and your deepest pleasure was earlier in your life, which is great. But on the topic of late bloomers, I read in an interview and they said that you're a late bloomer. Now, on the one hand, you could say that's true because you have become someone who's more visible because television is more visible because it goes in people's homes. But you had this wealth of work behind you on the New York stage and like Shakespeare, the New York Shakespeare Company. It's just like, do you mind? Because I find it really inspiring because there's so many things I still want to do with my work that I haven't been able to do yet. And so I like it when I see women who I think, God, it took them time too. It didn't all happen for them when they were 21. But do you mind being called a late bloomer? Do you ever just think, hang on a second, I spent my entire life doing this. What are you talking about?
I don't mind being called a late bloomer. I had a secondary job until the second season of True Blood. And I'll tell you what that secondary job was, because it was being a sex worker. And let me tell you how I was a sex worker. I was a standardized patient. So a standardized patient is a person who pretends to have a particular illness for medical schools. And medical schools ask you, I started off with pretending to have lupus. And so it's to teach medical students to have a bedside manner. So they would have to come in and ask me certain questions, and I would then mark them on their bedside manner skills. And one day a medical student asked me if they could perform a breast exam. And I said, yes. I had no idea that what I was supposed to say was, oh, they already did the breast exam. It's over there. The reports are over there. But I said, yes. And he performed a breast exam. And then later on, he freaked out. He was like, I wasn't really supposed to do a breast exam. She was supposed to say the report's over there. So the person who was in charge of, this was at Mount Sinai again, of this program said, well, if you're comfortable with having breast exams performed on you, then look into this program because this program is having gynecological exams performed on you so that you can teach medical students how to perform a proper gynecological exam that is not uncomfortable. And so many women would avoid this exam because of the shame, because it was not comfortable, because it was the power struggle. So for 10 years, I would have medical students perform gynecological exams on me, and I would show them how to insert a speculum without it being uncomfortable, how to find a person's cervix without it being uncomfortable, how to palpitate the ovaries without it being uncomfortable, how to give feedback in a way that's empowering, how to use language that is not, like for example, the speculum, they're called blades. They're not blades. When you say you're about to insert blades into a person's vagina, you're going to automatically tense up and the exam is going to be uncomfortable. Let's call them bills because they're like duck bills. They're about the size of two fingers. And so if you say to a woman that I'm about to insert bills that are about the size of two fingers, that's a lot more comfortable than saying I'm going to insert, I had a medical doctor say once, it's about the size of a small penis. Why say that at all? Why introduce that to this? So I'm incredibly proud of the work that I've done. Many times when medical students are just starting out, they're going to start out in a clinic and they're going to see maybe a woman who doesn't have as much money. They're going to maybe see a person of color. And I love the fact that they got practice on me, a person of color, doing these exams.
I know. It's really interesting, that whole area as well, though, because one of the things that I've written about in my book, The Happy Vagina, the speculum and the cervical examinations and the smear test were initially created on three Black women who were slaves. And there used to be a statue in New York that was dedicated to him. His name was Sims, Dr. Sims, and that's been taken down. And they're now putting something up to represent these women because he tested cervical procedures on these Black women without anesthetic. And because they were working for him, working as in being slaves, they were not allowed to say no. So it's not like there was no freedom of choice and there was no anesthetic. So I find it really interesting. And I guess one of the questions that I have for you, because there's also a really big conversation at the moment around surrogacy and the fact that I think surrogacy is great, but there are some campaigners, and it's the same around sex work, that these roles are often really roles that the working class women or women without money do in order to sustain themselves. And I guess I wondered whether or not with the medical, you call it sex work, but in both camps, whether it be the lupus or the sex work, was it mostly, you know, underprivileged people that were doing those things? Like,
no.
Is it? No.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. It was actors. It's a great job.
Oh, it's all actors.
Yeah, it was actors. There was one woman who was elderly who was, she was a sex surrogate, so that she worked with people who had sexual issues and difficulties. So this was her second career. So it was also a passion of hers. It was because we did them at, at 8 o'clock at night after hours so that you had all day to audition and, you worked at night.
And the definition that you've given the secondary part of that work is that you were doing sex work or were a kind of a sex worker. Is that a definition that is given by that pocket of the industry, or is that how you describe it?
I chose to use it, describe it, because I want to destigmatize sex work. I mean, I used my sex, I used my vagina during it. So, so that's why.
Yeah.
And it's kind of cheap.
It's a leveler.
Yeah. And also because sex workers in my family. And so I want to, there's research believe that my grandmother also was a sex worker. It's about destigmatizing it.
We're going to take a short break. Before we do, I just want to let you know that this podcast is produced by the female-founded production company, Pineapple Audio Production. Pineapple create groundbreaking podcasts from concept through to your headphones at the very highest level of audio. Their international team support independent podcasts like mine, The Happy Vagina, as well as major brands like the BBC and Grazia. And they are super passionate about helping young people into the audio industry. To find out more, go to pineappleaudioproduction.com or check them out on Instagram at pineappleaudioproduction. Are you experiencing repeated vulvovaginal infections? The incredible products at Momotaro Apotheca are here to help. Momotaro Apotheca is a certified organic and cruelty-free care line which gently treats symptoms associated with common issues like yeast infections, bacterial vaginosis, UTIs, and more. Their proactive plant-based products are a safe, sustainable solution, not only helping to prevent infections, but also solve acute conditions. Use them every day for itching, inflammation, or irritation, and let them treat the root of the infection. To find out more, go to www.momotaroapotheca.com. That's www.momotaroapotheca.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I recently saw on Instagram, someone put a post up saying, and this is so much of a deeper conversation, and I actually don't have the vocabulary to have it, but they just said that they thought all prostitution was rape. And a lot of the feminists that I'm kind of connected to in the UK are on that kind of thing. And I'm not in it. I think we need to destigmatize it and also get rid of the shame around sex so that sex becomes something so healthy that, you know, if you need to employ somebody to make sure that you are a healthy sexual human being, that's okay. You know, whether it's because you're single or because you're with a partner who can't have sex, whatever the fucking thing is, like, it's great that we can pay for sex, surely.
Well, when I paid for sex, I hired her. It was in Canada. I learned about her. I was out with drinks with my dear friends in Canada. I was doing a show called The 100. So I was up in Vancouver, and these two women, Amit and Vineet, and their sisters, my sisters, and we have traveled the world together, and they're just fabulous. And so I was there with them, and they invited, I've always met amazing people with them, and they invited this woman who writes about sex. Mm-hmm. And so she told me about getting a massage with a happy ending. And I was like, this is possible?
And men do it all the time.
I didn't know. And to do it in Vancouver in Canada, so it's not a third world country where people are doing it because they can't make any money. This particular woman, this was her passion. This was her passion, and it was an amazing experience. It was an amazing experience to just it all be about my pleasure, not being about worrying about somebody else. I mean, it was...
Yeah, but it's also just pleasure. It's just pleasure. Like, what's the big deal?
No, she was magnificent. And then and she served a tea and chocolate afterwards. And my orgasm was so incredibly strong. The second time I did it, it wasn't as strong just because, you know, the novelty had worn off and I wanted intimacy.
Mm. But also I think that it's not just the novelty. The truth is that it's a bit of a adrenaline rush, isn't it, to do that, you know? I do want to move on to something. One of the other reasons that I really wanted to speak to you is because I read, obviously, you know, as I said, you've had this longstanding career on the stage and you have been nominated for an Emmy and a Saturn and you've won an Obie. Like, you know, you have this kind of wealth of work and I could talk about so much of it. But the thing that I really want to know about is that I read when you were either studying or when you were in the early part of your career, you took one of Toni Morrison's books and adapted it. And Beloved changed my life forever. When my mother sent me that book to read, that and Oranges Are Not the Only Fruit, I thought, it was like my head and my heart exploded all at the same time. And I want to know how that came about and what she was like, because I'm so inspired by her. I'm like, I'm totally jealous. I feel like this is the closest I'm ever going to get to Toni Morrison.
Oh, well, what happened was it was senior year of college and our end of year project, our thesis, because I went to SUNY Purchase, was to create a one-woman show, a one-person show. And so I, with the help of an amazing woman, Kathleen Wiggins, she was Kathleen Wiggins now, she's Kathleen Harvey then. We worked together and adapting The Bluest Eye, Toni Morrison's The Bluest Eye, to a one-woman show. And it was, we got very good feedback on it. And the teacher who was in charge suggested that we, you know, we should bring it to New York, take it to New York. And Kathleen's mom saw that Toni Morrison was doing a lecture somewhere. And she said, you girls should go see, you know, Miss Morrison. And so we did, got into Kathy's car and we drove to, I don't even remember where, and listened to Toni Morrison lecture. And then we went up to her afterwards and we said that, you know, we're two students and we go to SUNY Purchase and we adapted your book, The Bluest Eye, to a one-woman show. And she gave us her phone number and she told us to call her. And we called her. And she invited us to her home, and I performed The Bluest Eye in her living room in front of her and her son. And she was very, very impressed with what I did, and she gave us the rights to perform it for a limited run in New York City, and we did it off Broadway 3 weeks, and that's my Toni Morrison story. She saw, in my humble opinion, she was Toni Morrison, the teacher, seeing two young Black women, students, gave us her phone number, invited us into her home. Yes, I'm where I am now because of teachers. And I just happened to be beyond lucky. And also Kathy's mom having the guts to say, go on, girl. And so that's my first Toni Morrison story. My second Toni Morrison story was I was invited to do a reading of her play about Emmett Till at the Public Theater, Shakespeare Public Theater. And afterwards, I went out to dinner. I was invited out to dinner with her and George C. Wolfe and a whole bunch of other people. The actors who were in the cast for the stage reading, you know, and this was very, very young. I just was happy, you know, to like be given food. I'm sitting there just trying not to say anything incredibly stupid. I'm just like, just sitting there being beyond grateful to be in the presence of this, you know, these greatness. And I was sitting across from someone. She didn't talk, I didn't talk. But then when I went home that day, I was looking through my albums, wanted to play an album, and I recognized the woman who I was sitting across from, Nina Simone.
No. Do you wish that you'd known it was her, or are you quite pleased? Because I think if I'd have known it was Nina Simone, I would have probably like made a fool of myself, hogged her, like taken her hostage, taken her, been like asked her 3 million questions.
I'm glad I didn't know, because Gina Torres sat me next to Cicely Tyson at her wedding, and I made a fool of myself asking too many questions, so it was really better that I didn't know.
It can happen. It can happen. Like, was there anything? Did Nina Simone sing,
or did she just be at the lunch? No, she was just quiet, and you know, she's just there.
What a woman! Did Toni Morrison say anything to you that you've taken through your career? Like, was there any kind? Did she impart any specific wisdom on you?
It was just, she saw me. She saw me and she saw Kathy. By giving us her phone number, her personal phone number, inviting her in us into her living room, just said that what I was doing, what we were doing, was good enough. You know? Maybe I wouldn't be here if she gave me her agent's phone number. You know, but just the fact that she gave us her personal phone number, invited us into her home, you know, said it all.
Yeah. You've said, again, I'm quoting from an interview, which is always slightly dangerous, but I read that you said, work is hard, but being a mom, as you all say in America, is harder. And, you know, we've just been talking about how hard it can be to be a creative, and for you particularly, coming to being a mother. Can we talk about your journey to motherhood? You know, I've spoken about it a lot on the podcast, and I do on the Instagram feed that I'm child free. It's not necessarily a choice that I made, although I do think there's always a bit of a choice in everything. And because of my story, we have a huge following of women who actually are also child free for many different reasons. And you're not child free. You have two adopted children with your late husband, who we talked about at the beginning. But I would like to hear a little bit about what your journey was like to making the choice for adoption and your choices around. I always find it slightly sensitive. I don't want to say, but about biology, like not, you haven't become a biological mother. And what was that journey like for you?
My mom was adopted. So adoption has always been the option for me. My very first relationship, I was with him for 6 years, and he had had a vasectomy because he and his girlfriend before that got pregnant and chose to abort the pregnancy, and he did not want to do that again, so he got a vasectomy. And I thought, good on you. And let's adopt. And then that relationship ended. And then I was married to someone else. And I just assumed that we would adopt because he spent a lot of time in West Africa. We saw children, like gangs of children, working together, begging for food. I mean, there were children everywhere that needed homes. And I asked him about adoption. And he was like, it's really important that for me that the child looks like me, he said. And I thought, that's new information. And he was a white Jewish man. And I was like, you know, because we're together, there's a real good possibility that they're going to look more like me than you. So that was a surprise. and then the relationship kind of fell apart a year later. And then when I met my then second husband, or third, we call it, the first is common-law, on our second date, because I thought he was pretty special, on our second date, I asked him, I said, what do you think about adopting an African-American child? And his response was, or two. And I thought, that's hot. So adoption was, and I tell this to my children, that it was not our second choice. We had unprotected sex, and yes, two times it was a miscarriage, and the third time the testing was revealed how unhealthy the pregnancy was, and we chose to terminate it. That's an interesting story. I was auditioning for True Blood, and I walked into the audition, and I had just had taken that test for the CBS. And I remember thinking, I'm not nervous about this audition. I'm nervous about that test I just took. And I felt really good about the audition. It went well. And then on the way home, I get a phone call from my doctor saying that the CBS test results have come in. This pregnancy is really not good. I don't know if you're going to go full term. And if you do go full term, I don't know how long the child will survive. And then call waiting came in. And the call waiting was another call from my agent saying, you've got True Blood. Now, I had no idea that True Blood was going to become True Blood. But I do know that that character was only supposed to be in the first season and then be killed off. I do know that if the pregnancy was a viable pregnancy, I would have had to disclose it, which might have continued their original idea of the character only being there for one season. So I am beyond grateful for the way that my life has turned out. I remember taking one particular test to make sure that the ovaries were like open and everything. And when we discovered they were, it was we had this option, IVF or adoption. And we were doing private adoption, so the cost was basically the same. And my husband and I chose adoption. I love it's an open adoption too, so that the birth parents picked us in both of our situations. I love that it's the human to human aspect of building a family. I have no regrets for not having a biological child. Growing up, I wanted to be an actor, and so I fulfilled that dream. And now, having a really tight vagina is very satisfying. So I'm happy.
What is that? Why am I grateful for my children today? Because I still have a tight vagina. You heard it here first. I think it's really beautiful, and I've been close to tears listening to you. I think it's, and I don't know if we have that in the UK, where I'm going to look into it, whether the birth parents can choose the adoptive parents. I think that's a really amazing system, and they are very lucky to have chosen you. And regarding your ongoing role in True Blood, and that hasn't just happened in True Blood, that's happened also in American Horror Story. If you were in one of my projects and you were only in the first two episodes, Dina, I tell you right now, I know why they're keeping you on, because you're absolutely amazing.
I'll just share that the adoption agency wanted us to keep everything kind of private until my children were 18 years old and then share that information. But because my mom, it was a different time, so she wasn't given that information, and she never really understood or knew all the information, and it haunted her. And I did not want that for my children. So we went against the adoption agency's recommendation, and we chose to stay in touch. And we are very much in touch. We text each other. We follow each other on IG. So I just wanted to share that so people know that's an option.
Our parents' generation, my mom also, her dad was actually a bigamist when she went to join him back in Canada, etc. It's a longer story, too much to talk about here. But the point is that my mom always felt that she didn't have the identity that she deserved. And I think identity, for me, I don't think about it, because it's not, for me, I know what my identity is. I mean, I do think about identity. I think about my own, but it's not a problem for me. And I think having identity as something that isn't addressed in an open, above board way, like, so essentially my mum, it was hidden from her that she had a different dad. And then she found out like way later. And then that becomes something that you have to try and process. Your entire life beforehand has been a lie. Everything's been a lie.
And I did not want that for my children. And so it's very much open. And I find that, there's room enough for everyone to be loved. I don't feel like threatened by them. They actually give me permission to love my children completely. My children, when they were younger, were a little confused. Like, is that my biological mother or your sister? Or yeah, they just know they're adults who love them. And that's great.
We've touched a little bit on abortion and the absolutely important role that it plays in our physical and mental health. And I know that one of the things that you are, there's so many things that you campaign about and that you're actively shouting about from your part of your universe. But I know that voting is something that's really important. And while, of course, you're in America, I think there's a few things around voting, particularly, I think, for me. So I think it's relevant for all listeners, regardless of whether or not they're currently living in the United States, where we do have a big following, or whether they're in the UK or somewhere else, and about the importance of voting and the apathy that is starting to come in, particularly with the younger generations, that they're like, that's not my government, so therefore I'm not going to vote. And the difficulty with that, and I get it. Sometimes I don't want to vote either. I think I don't like any of them. But by not voting, we are giving our power away, no matter where we live in the world. And I think also there's great statistics in both the UK and in America that particularly the Black communities and the people of color often, not just along with the young, feel like the governments are not their government. They're not looking after their interests. So I just, I really wanted to understand a bit about where your journey came to be advocating for this.
That's just the way I was raised. And it was just, my parents, my father, I remember when he became an American citizen, how excited he was about that. Before he became an American citizen, he, because he was working in the States, he represented his union on the March on Washington, so that he saw Martin Luther King's speech live. My mother met Malcolm X in Harlem. When I was going to church, we talked about, the preacher talked about politics from the pulpit and voting. It's in my DNA. you know, it was not too long ago where, I'll tell you this, like, I'll say it like this. Susan Lloyd-Parks, an amazing playwright who I got to work with, she talked about how when her parents would drive down south, my particular story, when we would, my family would vacation in Cape Cod each year, we would clock in time to being stopped by the police on the way down. You know, we budgeted it into the time to get to where we needed to go. My father worked for Mercedes-Benz, and we got a new Mercedes-Benz every year to drive. So all these Black people in a fancy Mercedes-Benz. But when, you know, we also got pulled over in our Plymouth. So being politically active wasn't a choice. It was survival. So that's why I am. I remember like waking up in a cold sweat, like 6 days, something like that, or after my husband died, because my husband was white. And I woke up and I realized, oh my God, Jack just became a Black man. Because when his white father was alive, anything happened, I could send my white husband to help Jack. I choose white caregivers. So if I happen to be working and busy, a white person shows up as the caregiver to my children. That says something different. It says, oh, white person? I mean, it could be subliminal, or it could just be outgoing. She's got money. She's got a white person here handling these kids. And it's a way to protect my son. And it's awful that I have to do that, but that's reality.
I'm so sorry you have to. I'm so sorry you have to do that.
But I'm lucky that I have the means to do it. My parents would go to school board meetings. and speak up. I remember speaking up at a school board meeting. So it's just the way I was raised.
Mm-hmm. Has the overturning of Roe v. Wade made your focus in this area even stronger? Or was it already at 100%?
I think that and having teenagers. I mean, I live in a blue state. I'll never not live in a blue state. I am beyond grateful that I had the choice to terminate my pregnancy when I saw that my pregnancy was so incredibly unhealthy. And we named him Derek, by the way. You know, in the red states, people who have money will still be able to have access to whatever they want to. It's people who don't have. And because I know what it's like to have money and know what it's like to not have money, I choose to be vocal. As well as, you know, people like my work and that I have a bit of a platform. What am I going to talk about? You know, deodorant? You know, though I do use a crystal because, you know, I can, you know, as well as my mom was a registered nurse. So health care was always just a big thing in our family too. So it's just
so important. And to advocate for people that have got less than us, as you've said. And I can't believe it, because I'm literally having the nicest time talking to you, but we have run out of time. And I am going to end with one question, which is actually very on point for you talking about and being so honest that you did other jobs up to True Blood. And if I often post stuff on the Happy Vagina Instagram feed and all our other platforms, but I'm a bit obsessed with that Instagram, about it's you are not too old and you are not too late. And if ever there was an advocate for you are not too old, not too late, it is you. I think it's you. And you've admitted, or you've shared with us openly, that you've had to do secondary jobs. And when you were nominated for an Emmy, in an interview, you said that you were asked, you know, kind of what you thought about it. And you said, I can't think about it. It will mess with my head. All I can do is do my work and be in the game. And Adina Porter, if you had any tips for people listening now, no matter what career they're in, or whether it's just they're having a difficult time with themselves or in their relationship with their kids, or whatever their current circumstances are, what would be your like top three tips for people to stay resilient in the face of things not going yet where they want them to be?
The first thing I would do is journal. That's the first thing I would suggest, journaling, making that time for yourself. And it might just be, you know, when you're in the bathroom having a bowel movement, just, you know, because you might not have the privacy anywhere else or the time to journal and to write down your thoughts. Just to empty it all out and to do it consistently, and maybe even, you know, writing down gratitude, you know, whatever you can be happy about. And I would also be really, really careful about comparing yourself to other people. Because, you know, in my business, I spent decades comparing myself with other people and wanting to look like other people, that maybe possibly that would, you know, get me into different doors or whatever. And it was just self-sabotage, because I wasn't working on being the best me I could be. I was working on trying to be an imitation. So going back to what we originally talked about with, like, what am I feeding myself? So that if I'm looking at IG, I look at posts that feed me, and I get rid of posts. I don't follow a lot of other actors only because I'm constantly comparing myself. And it's not like I don't want to support them. I can support them other ways, but I just got to protect my inner soul, you know, and it's just difficult to protect my inner soul if I'm comparing myself to, oh, she got that job, or she's doing this, or, oh, look how thin, because nobody ever posts their kid crying. Nobody posts. And you know, the Christmas tree is not finished decorating, and it didn't have time for that yet. No, people don't post that. People post all these perfectly things, and it's bullshit. It's not true, you know? So be really, really mindful about taking care of your inner soul and what you're inadvertently digesting.
God, yeah. I mean, I might just, when we finish this interview, I'm going to go and do a whole load of unfollowing. Yeah. What's your third one?
Yeah. Cause it's just that healthy. And then do something that makes you feel good. And I dance. I make sure that my soul is filled by dancing. And yeah, sometimes my kids call me corny because I don't do the latest dances. I don't need the latest dances, but I'm not thinking and I'm just moving. And, you know, and,
I love, and I've loved talking to you. What is next for Adina Porter? What are you, because on your Twitter, you say,
no spoilers.
Well, you say actor, mum, human, and not always in that order. What are you being at the moment, Adina Porter? What's the primary purpose of Adina Porter in the next month or 2 months?
Right now it's being a mom because it's finals, and also having a Christmas celebration, which is about me celebrating me for many, many years. You know, it would be like, well, I'm going to go with my husband's family. If my husband was alive, we would take turns. And I decided to take my turn because I'm no longer a daughter. Both my parents are gone. And I want to create a holiday that's about my family. And my family is enough, the three of us. So there's that. But work-wise, I have a couple of projects coming out. And I finally started reading the fine print on my NDAs, non-disclosure agreement.
So I had to talk about it.
I can't tell you what they are, but there are a few of them that I'm really, really, really proud and excited about. On streaming
watch this space.
Yeah, and I will post on IG when and
when
Twitter.
You do, we will be reposting you and celebrating all that you are, Adina Porter. Thank you so much. I'm sort of slightly beautiful way overwhelmed with all of the amazing things that you've shared with us. And I know that everyone listening is going to have felt the same. Thank you so much for coming on The Happy Vagina. Final question, what makes your vagina happy today?
My first thought that comes to my mind, and it's I started drinking lemon water in the morning.
Me too.
Because supposedly it's really good
for the gut.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And so it's really kind of personal, but it.
I like it.
It eliminates really well, and so if my gut and my butt are working, then yeah. I just feel like my entire body is working, and then it will mean that my vagina is at its optimum. I also use vaginal weights. I'm sharing so that other people can also share. They're incredibly inexpensive. Oh, because I talk about Kegels, and we did that. We talk about that when we were doing, teaching how to do medical gynecological exams. I bring the table up. So you're sitting up, it's more comfortable than lying back. I have a mirror in my hand so that I can see what's going on, so I can see any changes and then bring it to a doctor's attention sooner rather than later. But you can't if you don't actually see your vagina. So I love vaginal weights to keep everything taut, to keep for stronger orgasms and against incontinence.
I mean, listen, the vaginal weights and the cleansing with the lemon water, I am here to confirm, without even being anywhere near it, that Adina Porter has an elite vagina and vulva.
I do.
Thank you so much for joining us, Adina.
It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. I'm sorry if I talked too much.
You didn't. You okay, didn't. Good. It was amazing. Thank
okay,
you. Goodbye.
Thank
goodbye.
Bye.
I'm Mika Simmons. That was Adina Porter. This is the Happy Vagina Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Please don't forget to subscribe, like, join us on Instagram at The Happy Vagina. Tell your friends about what we're doing. We need and value your support.